Today I'm going to be presenting on how we've leveraged cluster computing in order to parallelize debugging. So to start, I want you all to think about the most challenging bug you've ever faced in your life. And I want you to think about how long it took you to solve that bug. Anyone able to solve their most challenging bug in only a day? I'm sure, kind of more likely, many of you have spent weeks on bugs before, right? Or if you're anything like me, you can even think of bugs that took you months to solve, maybe even a couple that kind of never got fixed, right? And they're just kind of still sitting out there. Now, my talk is going to be all about the tools that we use on these most challenging bugs. And in particular, we want to make them better, so we're going to turn to cluster computing. Now, for the really simple bugs, right, that maybe only take you a day to solve or something, you may reach for GDB, printf debugging, but studies have shown that oftentimes we need more powerful tools for these most challenging bugs, and one class of tools that we may look towards, we refer to as tracing tools. In these tracing tools, we inject new logic into our buggy software in order to track our programs as they execute. We call this new logic tracing, and it includes things like logging code, perhaps invariant checks, right, over our program state. To use these tracing tools, after we've injected this new code, we re-execute our failing execution, one that triggers this bug and then later causes some failure, right? While this is happening, our tracing code produces output. And this output can often be very large, kind of unmanageable for you to just walk through in grep. So you'll turn to some scripts, and these scripts may filter out messages, they may track dependencies across these tracing messages. And so this is more or less the workflow for these tracing tools that we use all the time. Now, when we're using these tracing tools, we're forced to kind of pay attention to this trade-off between the amount of tracing that we add and the resulting overhead of our tool. For simple bugs, we often don't need to trace that much state. It may not be that frequent we really worry about. So we wind up with fairly low overhead tools. On the other hand, for these most challenging bugs that took us months to solve and what we're really focusing on, you often need to add more and more tracing to your code. You may do things like track all memory allocations that are occurring. Maybe you write really large invariants that track these very large data structures, and this just takes a lot of work. To make matters even worse, over the course of a single debugging session, when you're looking at a single bug, you often have to change your tracing code multiple times. You refine your logging, you change the invariants you're adding, and as a result, we just spend a lot of time waiting on things to run and less time actually solving our bugs. Now, in this project, we break this trade-off altogether, allowing complex tracing code to run with low overhead by turning to a technique that we call cluster-fueled debugging. Using cluster-fueled debugging, a developer can parallelize her debugging query across thousands of cores in a compute cluster. We've found that at this scale, debugging queries, even really complex ones that once took hours to run, can often run in seconds. And this allows a cluster that's shared across a development team or organization to become an on-demand debugging tool for all of the team's members to use when they're facing their most challenging bugs. This idea of parallelization is a fairly simple idea, but actually realizing it for debugging is challenging. And the challenge comes because these tracing tools are made up of three basic components of work, and all of these components are sequential. Right? So the components of work that make up these tracing tools include logic from the buggy execution, logic from the injected tracing code that we've added, and logic from this analysis pass that we're running. They're all sequential, so if we just throw cores at the problem, we shouldn't expect any acceleration. Instead, in order to realize this cluster-fueled debugging vision, we have to introduce scalability as a design constraint. And we've done this in this project to build Sledgehammer, which is the world's first cluster-fueled debugger. Sledgehammer is a replay-based tool, and so we basically model these tracing tools as queries over prior executions of your software. This facilitates this iterative refinement of your debugging queries because all queries over the same execution will receive consistent results. Sledgehammer is designed to mimic the current tracing tools of today by allowing you to specify new tracing code that will be injected and new analysis code that will interpret that tracing output. And it leverages cluster-fueled debugging in order to support three new debugging tools. Now, we've used Sledgehammer in seven different debugging scenarios, and we've seen that it's continuing to scale well up to over 1,000 cores. And so we think it's really achieving this vision of cluster-fueled debugging. So we've articulated our vision of cluster-fueled debugging. Next, I want to talk about how you can use Sledgehammer for a specific debugging scenario. In this debugging scenario, a Memcached developer notices that her program is being corrupted during stress testing. And in particular, an assertion statement is being triggered that tells her some internal data structure, which is called the cache, is being corrupted. The developer wants to know, what's the root cause of this problem? In particular, what line of code is leading my program astray? Now, to use this today, she may start by writing a function, one of these tracing functions, that determines whether this internal data structure is valid or invalid by walking over the entire structure. She would then add a bunch of calls to this function throughout her program at various points in time, and then finally write an analyzer that coalesces this information to determine those points in time in which her cache is invalid. Unfortunately, when using this tool, she has to be wary of this trade-off between the amount of time she's calling the function and the resulting overhead. She would probably like to call this function a ton of times, everywhere even, but because of the overhead, she has to limit the tracing and ultimately limit the power of her query. However, by using Sledgehammer, she can use a brand new tool, which is called continuous function evaluation, that logically lives on the far right of this graph. So in continuous function evaluation, the developer can specify that tracing code, in this case her check cache function, be executed logically after every single instruction in her program. Continuous function evaluation will produce a log that shows the output of this function each time the output changes, as well as the associated instruction that causes that change. To use this tool, the developer first has to capture a recording of memcached when it's crashing. She then specifies the same tracing code and more or less the same analysis code as she did in the original tools. Instead of hand-selecting exactly where to call this function, she can add a single source code annotation that tells Sledgehammer, please run this continuously. Sledgehammer returns back the results, the set of instructions that are causing the cache to be invalidated. Now, unfortunately for the developer, none of these appear buggy immediately because they're all instructions that are supposed to update the cache by design. Therefore, it's not wrong for them to invalidate it occurring according to her check. This is a typical problem in debugging, right? She learned something. There's no wild stores, there's no memory corruption going on this cache. But she doesn't yet know what the root cause of her problem is. And so she has to ask another question and refine her query. In this case, she knows that the cache is updated by multiple threads. And so she wonders, this lock that's in my code, is that protecting my cache or do I have a bug somewhere here? Now, so she's gonna refine her query and she turns to another Sledgehammer tool, which we call retro logging, that allows her to add new logging code to her program and specify when to run it. For this particular query, the developer is interested in tracking lock acquires and lock releases as the program runs. And to do this, she specifies two new tracing functions and adds two new source code annotations. She updates her analyzer to look for points in time in which the cache is invalid and the lock is unlocked. This is basically looking for atomicity violations in the software. She runs this query on Sledgehammer and returns back two instructions. The first one is an initialization instruction, which isn't a bug because the cache isn't yet shared across threads. The second one occurs and is an atomicity violation, which is directly leading to this corrupted cache. So let's take a quick step back and look at what I want you to take away from this particular scenario. First, we've seen the developer can use roughly the same approach of injecting tracing code and then specifying analysis code over this tracing output. We've seen that she can iteratively refine complex queries and she doesn't have to worry at all about the overhead of her tracing tools. We've seen how Sledgehammer accelerates cutting-edge tools like retrologging and can even enable brand new tools like continuous function evaluation. So I've shown you how you can use Sledgehammer for a specific debugging scenario. Next, I want to talk about how we've followed scalability as a design constraint in order to allow these debugging queries to be parallelized across thousands of cores in a compute cluster. So recall that these tools and these queries are made up of three basic components of work. In order to parallelize the first component, the execution of the original program, we turn to a technique called epoch parallelism. In epoch parallelism, we partition the replay into chunks, which we call epochs, and we assign each of the cores in the cluster to a different epoch. Each of the cores uses deterministic replay, as well as a checkpointing scheme to execute only those instructions contained in its assigned epoch. Now, tracing code runs alongside the execution, and as a result, epoch parallelism parallelizes this tracing code as well. Unfortunately, because it's relying on deterministic replay, there's a problem that occurs when we inject this tracing code. The issue is that unconstrained tracing code can modify the program state that the replay is relying upon, and so the replay may diverge from what was originally recorded. This can cause nodes to crash or even silently corrupt your debugging output, so it breaks the veracity of Sledgehammer as a tool. And we've even found this issue to be pervasive. All of the queries that we've run over Sledgehammer run into this problem, and so we need a systematic solution that solves it. We refer to these solutions as tracing isolation. They're tools that allow us to prevent tracing code from updating replay state. To realize, or the best tool for cluster field debugging, both needs to be scalable, but also we need it to be a lightweight tool, because, because tracing code is going to be executed very frequently over the course of a debugging query. Now, in our paper, we talk more about this, but we found that prior approaches don't meet both of these criteria, and so we innovated by applying an undo log-based approach, which we call compiler-based isolation. In compiler-based isolation, we statically instrument tracing code in order to output all of the updates that they make to the program state as it's running. So as you're executing a tracer, you log all of the writes that are made. After the tracing code finishes running, we revert all of these updates by walking through this log. This essentially restores the state of the application, so we can continue running without any worry about any divergences in the replay. This is very similar to techniques used for things like transactional memory, and we found it applies very well for cluster field debugging since it's scalable and lightweight. So in summary, I've shown you how we used epoch parallelism and compiler-based isolation as scalable approaches for both the execution and the tracing components. Next, I want to talk about how we let developers specify a multi-tier approach to parallelize this analysis phase. In Sledgehammer, developers can specify three types of analyzers. Local analyzers run over each of the cores in the cluster in parallel. They run over the tracing outputs from each of the epochs that they're assigned to. Stream analysis passes information over a chain where the chain is ordered based upon execution order. We found this to be useful when determining dependencies across tracing code, and our prior work on Jetstream showed that you need it for things like dynamic information flow. Finally, developers can specify tree-based analyzers, which take input from multiple analyzers and combine it to form a single output. You can configure it as shown here with a single level of the tree, or for particularly large deployments, you can have multi-level tree approach, each level sending information to the subsequent ones. So this requires some work on the developer's part in order to reconstruct their analysis code, but we found that they can get as much as 4 times faster by leveraging this approach, and so they often get bang for their buck. So I've shown you how we follow scalability as a design constraint to parallelize each of these three phases that make up a debugging query. Next, I want to talk about how we use this for three new debugging tools. Unfortunately, because of timing, I'll refer you to the paper for the second two on this slide and just talk about continuous function evaluation. Recall that in continuous function evaluation, the developer specifies tracing code that they'd like to logically execute after every single instruction, and Sledgehammer promises to produce the output of that function each time the output changes. Now, doing this is actually way too expensive, even when we turn to cluster field debugging. So instead, we need to find some approach that lets us reduce the number of times we actually call this function. To do this, we force the functions to be deterministic, so that their behavior will depend only on the state of the execution that's being debugged. We track the inputs to this function and reevaluate it each time the debugged execution updates any inputs, so this dramatically reduces the number of calls. So let me show you how we actually track these inputs. We use two basic techniques. At the beginning of the execution, we evaluate the continuous function, which we've statically instrumented in order to produce its input set. That's the set of the state of the execution that it reads. We use memory page protections in order to track any updates that are made to this input set by the execution. This is essentially like setting a watch point over all of the memory addresses in the input set. When the debugged execution updates any of these inputs, we reevaluate the function since we know its behavior may change. This updates any output and potentially updates the input set. We make sure to reprotect all of the potentially new input set from the new execution. So this basic approach of static instrumentation plus memory page protections, once you couple this with cluster field debugging, makes continuous function evaluation a feasible debugging tool. So next, I want to talk about our evaluation. We evaluated Sledgehammer on 7 different debugging scenarios. Some of the scenarios come from existing bug reports or problems that we found in code. In other cases, we found debugging tools that application developers had already existed in the tools, and we inject new bugs that can be solved by these existing tools. We see that these are very complex queries. They all execute tracing code millions of times, and some have sequential latencies of as much as 2 hours. Two columns that provide an interesting comparison are the time to just replay the benchmark with no debugging enabled, and the time to execute these queries at 1,024 cores. We see that at this scale, we're seeing results at 1024 cores of even these really complex debugging scenarios faster than you can just replay the execution of your program. Another thing to note is that in many cases, we're approaching sub-second latency. Next, I want to show Sledgehammer's scalability as we increase the number of cores. The number of cores is shown on the x-axis. Normalized speedup is shown on the y-axis. This is a log-log graph, and we've shown ideal scalability here with the black line, and then all of the other scenarios have their own scalability graphs. We see that at 128 cores, we're scaling almost perfectly, even though these aren't embarrassingly parallel scenarios. As we continue to scale to over 1,000 cores, we continue to scale well and see average speedup of 416x. However, you see that in some cases, we're not quite scaling perfectly, and you may wonder, why is this? Well, there's two basic reasons. The first is that in these cases in which we're approaching sub-second latency, we're more or less victims of our own success. We're running out of work for us to scale, and as a result, initialization starts to take over. We still claim victory since you're getting sub-second latency. The other problem we run into is that of outliers. It turns out this is more or less the tail at scale problem where we have a challenging time predicting how long each of the tracing code is going to run over a particular epoch. We have way more analysis of this in the paper. There's tons of other micro benchmarks we've run. I encourage you to read if you're curious. So, in conclusion, today I've introduced our vision for cluster-fueled debugging, which allows developers to parallelize complex debugging queries across thousands of cores in a compute cluster. Realizing this vision requires that we introduce scalability as a design constraint, which we followed to build Sledgehammer, the world's first cluster-fueled debugger. Sledgehammer provides an interface similar to today's debugging tools, allowing you to inject tracing code and run analysis code over this tracing output. It uses cluster-fueled debugging to facilitate three new tools. We've leveraged Sledgehammer in 7 different debugging scenarios and seen that it continues to scale well up to over 1,000 cores. One exciting result is that at this scale, we see that Sledgehammer can execute complex debugging queries even faster than you can just replay your buggy execution with no tracing code injected. I'd like to thank you for making it to the end of day 2. I'll be poster number 13, and I'm happy to take any questions you may have.
Henry Ching from Stanford University. Really great work.
Thanks.
Just a quick question, though. Can you handle cases where the compiler optimizes out instructions, and this is actually what causes bugs?
Ooh. So the way that we inject debugging code now, the annotations that we're doing, I think require debugging information, like to be compiled in the application. I'm not sure that that's fundamental, though, because you can instrument by specifying instructions instead. It probably takes a lot more work on the developer's part. So the tool today probably wouldn't handle this exact case, but I don't think it would be that hard to allow it.
Just to clarify, you're instrumenting at source line level or assembly instruction level?
Developers specify where they want to call code at source code level by adding these annotations into the source code. But I'm saying it wouldn't be too hard for us to extend what we're doing to instruction level.
That makes sense.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Are there more questions? So I just have a question about scale. So originally, you need to execute, you know there's a bug and you're executing the program to reproduce the bug mm-hmm. originally. So how, you know, what are the implications for the volume of data you're producing and actually running the debugging processes when it takes a long time for that bug to manifest,
in the recording phase?
Yes.
So I think we don't, today, if you were to bug, you're in the same boat of having to at least be able to recreate this bug at some point. In fact, you're in a worse case than we are here. We basically say, if you can recreate it once, you can query it every time you want. In today's tools, more or less, you add this tracing code, which probably changes the behavior of a program slightly, and you still need to recreate the bug every time. So I think we haven't really changed this problem at all in Sledgehammer from what these tracing tools are experiencing today. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, thanks.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, no more questions.
Cool.
Thank you very much.